Podcast, the English language for Ocabado podcast that nobody asked for. My name's David.
And my name is The Lightning Seeds featuring Badil and Skinner.
Yay! We're going to have a bit of a burst of that later, I think.
is it coming home?
Well, that's because this episode is the first of our seasonal specials, and it is about the Czechs at Euro 96.
Hooray!
The tournament in which it was supposed to come home. Spoilers, didn't.
This is one of these specials where I get to sit back and relax for a lot of it.
Yes, because I have four pages of scripts to read out. It was a slow day at work.
But don't let that put you off, listener. It's very entertaining.
You haven't heard it yet, but
I believe in you.
Before we started recording, you said this was your first real memory of watching football, because you were six, seven?
Not really a memory of watching it. So, see, this is probably one of the most recent football, like big football tournament, that I have very much no recollection of at all. I was very much France 98 was
right,
my first
sorry,
one.
Yeah, France 98 was yours, yeah.
I've seen the important bits, so Scotland bits.
Yeah,
but that's
there aren't
really
that many of those.
Oh,
though,
I mean, I saw England, obviously England crashing out, it was glorious, but... Yeah.
And also England absolutely stuffing your boys with one of the best goals the European Championships has ever seen.
We might get onto that if we have a time.
Might be though, all right, okay. Because it was my first proper moment of kind of realisation that I really, really like football. Because I may have mentioned before, maybe I didn't, maybe I did, I'm not from a very footballing family. Neither of my parents are into it. My brother my brother played for his school and such, but as fans we weren't. And Euro 96 was the first time I realised, you know, this is quite a big deal, this football thing.
Did you buy the single?
I did buy the single, actually. It was one of the first CDs I bought, probably. And it was the tournament that got my brother into goalkeeping, because he fell in love with Petr Kolba, who we're going to be talking a lot about. He didn't know any of the Czech players. Well, neither of us knew any of the Czech players. But he decided Petr Kolba was who he wanted to be when he grew up, which is very nice.
That is nice.
Yeah. So let's dive right into that after this little bit of a break.
We're not creative enough, and we're not positive enough.
It's coming home, it's coming home, it's coming. Football's coming home.
We'll go on getting back, as I'm getting back, as I'm getting back, as I'm getting back.
It's coming, football's coming home, it's coming.
So, Euro 96 was held in England, as most of you will probably know. Four groups with four teams each, and the Czechs had a very, very tough group, actually. They were drawn with Germany, Italy and Russia, which was a very nasty one. Italy had been World Cup finalists 2 years previously, of course, and had a team containing, well, Maldini, Costa Curta, Ravanelli, Del Piero, Di Matteo, Chiesa, Casiraghi, Albertini... And some 20-year-old centre-half called Alessandro Nesta. I don't really know what became of him, but he was probably something good. He came along for the ride. All these players were in their mid to late 20s, and they were rightly considered one of the favourites, because any forward line involving Casiraghi, Chiesa, Ravanelli, etc. is, you know, Del Piero is fairly formidable.
Shocked at an Italian team being at least in its late 20s.
Well, yes, exactly, of course. Elsewhere in the group, we had Germany, and they were, well, Germany. Okay. A squad containing such names as Matthias Sammer, Oliver Kahn, Jürgen Klinsmann, Andreas Müller, and a big, bustling, slightly journeyman striker named Oliver Bierhoff, who, despite being 28, had only played 5 times for Germany before this, but had just come off the back of scoring 16 goals for Udinese in Serie A after having joined the previous summer from Ascoli, and we will be talking about him in slightly more depth later. He's very important.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Russia, no mugs in that group either. No massive names, but...
I have a fun fact about Russia.
Yeah, go on.
David, because I had...
About the team or the country?
About Russia. This is really fascinating, because I was doing my own little research bits and stuff, because while you were doing the checks and stuff, I had a little look into... refresh my memory about that Scotland team. And Scotland were in the qualification for Euro 96 with Russia.
Yeah.
Going into Euro 96, Russia were ranked third in the world.
Whoa, really?
May 1996, they were third.
That's incredible.
And I would have had, like, no knowledge at all of that.
No, like that. Like, that players, that's really surprising to me as well.
I don't know if it was like a USA thing where they just kept beating, like, minnows, but...
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know how that happened. I mean, you know, considering the events of the last week, I can't imagine Russia cheating at any form of sport, can you? No? No?
More about my hot or nots later.
Anyway, yeah, so they... well, Russia were the third team in their group. They were able to call on players like Valeri Karpin, Viktor Anopko, Andrei Kanchelskis were still large at this point. Football manager favourite Vladimir Beschastnik, who was only 22 but on his way to virtual glory. And one of, being the massive football hipster I am, one of my all-time favourite players, Alexander Mostovoy, the wonderful Alexander Mostovoy, who was at Strasbourg at that time but then got a move to... Celta Vigo and spent 8 years there being an angry cultured cult hero in the centre of Celta's midfield.
I assume that the Russia team is quite like a lot of Russia teams that goes to these championships and that they're heavily domestically based.
Surprisingly
like
not,
CSKA and so
actually.
On.
Surprisingly no. not, no. There is a nice scattering. They are the team in the group with actually, I think, the fewest domestic based players.
I can actually see that with Italy and Germany.
Yeah. Yeah, Germany's backbone actually was built on the mighty sides of Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. It was about 80% those two sides because Munich are the giants that they are, and Dortmund had just won the European Cup, I think. So they had an incredible side.
Yeah, yes, they did, because that was what's his name?
Paul Lambert. Dortmund, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a sprinkling of Werder Bremen and Eintracht Frankfurt thrown in, but it was mainly those two. Italy was Juve, Lazio, Parma and AC Milan, because it was the building of that great Parma side with Asprilla and Buffon, who would come through about 2 or 3 years later. Russia was pretty diverse, but they still had players from Spartak, CSKA, but also Dmitry Kharin at Chelsea, Kanchelskis at Everton, and Real Sociedad and players like that.
So. Kanchelskis later to play for Rangers as well.
Yeah, of course. The Czechs, on the other hand, I'm going to show you their squad list here. I've actually got it printed out.
Oh, good. We have, coming close to the mic for this.
Yes, we have a fair selection of slightly odd, you know, we've got your normal Sparta, Slavia...
Drnovica is...
Sigmar Olomouc. Drnovica is in there.
Standing out very much for me.
Yep. Servette FC of Switzerland, home of Václav Němeček there.
Team that Aberdeen beat 6-0 on the way to a big European Cup run. It might have been the Cup Winners' Cup.
Okay. Two at Kaiserslautern, one at Schalke. And the man, the legend, Pavel Zernicek, who was keeping goal for Newcastle United at that point. But mainly a very home-based side. And yeah, I think Russia is definitely the most non-domestic side there. So I've actually scheduled breaks into these little bits. So we're going to have a small musical interlude, and when we get back, I've got a quiz for you, Sam. So okay, here we go. Let's have a little break. We're going to eat some of our, we've got beer snacks. What are these?
We've got Thai chili rice crackers.
Tis the season, Sam.
Fa la 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 la.
So, we've got a little quiz. As I said, the finals took place in England, and they were held at 8 different stadiums. I'm still not entirely sure how we're pluralising that, what the house style is. Stadia, stadiums? What do you think?
Stadia.
I like stadia. I think it's proper.
makes me sound like an intellectual.
So, yeah, 8 stadia in England that hosted games.
I'm to name these, am I?
That's right.
Christ. All right. Wembley.
Good.
Villa Park.
Good.
Old Trafford.
Yes.
Anfield.
Yes. Now it gets trickier.
Right. St. James's Park.
Very good. It's 5.
Count the dead airtime, listener.
Weirdly, it's a peculiarly northern tournament.
I think something about me says Middlesbrough, but it's not. I'm thinking of 1966, yeah, where there were games there.
Yeah, that was when North Korea were based in Middlesbrough.
Okay, I might just go for an absolute mad one and say, like, Ewood Park.
It'll be Leeds.
Yes. It'll be in Leeds.
Elland Road.
Elland
Very
Road,
good.
Yep. That's what you call.
Yep. That's six.
Valley Parade.
No.
That's before it had its refit, right?
Yeah, it was. It had recently been on fire, so probably
true.
Not.
Two more Northern.
Yeah, well, one Midlands.
All right, so one of them will probably be in Nottingham. Or...
Yes.
Okay, so it'll be Forest's ground rather
City
than...
Ground,
City Ground,
right, yeah.
And
in Nottingham.
The other one is, I want every bone in my body wants it to be Carlisle United.
It
it's not.
Really isn't, no.
Is this what I'm likely to get?
South Yorkshire, two teams in the city.
Oh, it'll be Sheffield.
Yeah.
And it will, I get to choose one of them. And
it's the one that always hosted FA Cup games.
Hillsborough.
Hillsborough, very okay. good. So, yeah. Wembley, and the most southerly other stadium was Villa Park in Birmingham. Everything was north of Birmingham.
That's
which is
quite
interesting.
Something, actually.
Yeah. Villa Park, Anfield, the City Ground, Hillsborough, St James's, Old Trafford, mm-hmm. and Elland Road.
You'd have thought there would have been more than one in London, but perhaps this is to stop like so many people converging on the city.
I think it was that, and also I think the fact that we hadn't had a tournament since 1966, and also England always played in London, so England got London,
yeah,
but it was a chance for the slovenly people in the sticks to get a bit of international excitement as well.
Yeah, so is that why Scotland played all of their ones in the southern bits? Yeah,
well, yeah, exactly. We don't want you lot charging down. But I mean, that's other than that, you would have had Stamford Bridge, which still possibly even... No, would not have had terracing, but wouldn't have been big enough.
Mm-hmm. Would Highbury have been big enough? Because it was 20-something.
Highbury, if you remember, they could never play any European Cup games there because the pitch wasn't big enough.
Oh, so small, yeah.
Yeah, so they couldn't have played at Highbury, wouldn't have played at Stamford Bridge. Otherwise, London...
Berlin Ground? Small again, 23,000.
Probably too small.
000.
White Hart Lane, possibly, yeah. But there again, it's another London venue. Probably they just wanted to spread it about because it's only eight venues anyway. Mm-hmm. So give it to eight cities.
Villa Park's like massive as well,
Villa
isn't
Park's
it?
Huge,
and obviously Newcastle as well is a very big stadium.
Exactly, yeah. And actually, lots of them weren't even full. Sort of Old Trafford in the game between the Czechs and Russians, there's only 35,000 odd there. You know, locals and the few who had managed to travel from either of those countries. So, yeah, there you go. Anyway, like I said, very Northern Midlands tournament in that sense. The Czechs based themselves in Preston, bless them. And they decided they needed a warm-up game. Russ Rigby was the groundsman, club secretary and kit man at Bamber Bridge FC. He was mowing the pitch when somebody called outside for him to come to the phone. On the other end of the line was the manager of a local hotel. Would Bamber Bridge be interested in playing the Czech Republic in a pre-tournament friendly, he asked. I told them I'd have to talk to the chairman, Dennis Allen, to confirm it. As soon as we spoke, he said, ring back now and I'll tell him of course we would. Bamber Bridge had just won the Unibond Premier Division and should have been promoted to the conference, but were told their facilities weren't up to scratch. Good enough for the Czech Republic, but not for the conference, apparently, according to Russ Rigby. Dušan Urin, the Czech manager, he came to Iron Gate, as their ground is called, to have a look around and told the chairman he just wanted a bit of a run out, anything too physical and the game would be called off. To which the manager and chairman both said, that's absolutely fine. The chairman was happy to help, he just wanted the publicity, basically.
Of course.
And what publicity it was. National media got involved. The Times sent a reporter up. It was screened live on TV in the Czech Republic.
But the biggest, very Czech.
But the biggest problem was beer.
It always is. It always is.
This is where it gets really bizarre. The Czech national team had an official beer supplier, which was
Pilsner.
At that point. And they had sent their own, before the phrase was a thing, pop-up bar to follow the team around where they were playing, right?
Yeah.
But at Iron Gate, this tiny little ground, there was nowhere to put it. They couldn't, like, quickly re-pipe the clubhouse bar and, like, roll the barrels in and redo it, because that would have meant wasting a lot of the beer, and the club couldn't really afford to waste barrels and barrels of beer. And Paulson also wanted their own slice of the publicity action. They had a big marquee, like a big branded marquee, and they were giving away like glasses and stuff to go with everything. So they needed a place to put their marquee. The only place they could find was on the roof of the members' club.
Right.
Because it was a flat roof. So they erected a bar and a marquee on the roof of the members' club. If you wanted a pint, you had to go up the fire escape on the outside of the building. And get a pint from the roof.
That's magic.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
That's really good. That's a humdinger. Because I thought you were going to say, like, based in Preston, and they were going to play North End at, like, Deep Dale.
No.
Something. No.
Yeah, this is great. So, the game was played in front of 2,300 people. Every member of the Czech squad got a run out at some point, and it finished 9-1.
To Bamber Bridge.
that would be amazing. Yeah. But it finished 9-1 to the Czechs with, and I'm going to give him a name check, he won't listen obviously, but Mr. Steve Denny getting the consolation for Bamber Bridge FC.
Denny!
And he was quoted as saying, basically, it's given him something to talk about in the pub for the rest of his life when he scored against the Czech Republic.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good story, eh?
I like the groundsman in this, so it's like, good enough for the Czech Republic, but not,
not
the
good enough for the conference.
Has he been to Chrudim?
It's a good point, actually, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Has he been to Varnsdorf? Actually, Varnsdorf was quite a nice setup, I thought.
I'm going to say he's probably never been to Chrudim or Varnsdorf.
Yeah, I mean, there's an outside shot that he's, you know, deed, so he won't get the chance already.
Ross Rigby. Anyway, we're going to have another quick little break, and do you want to break the story up now, or should we continue with the story?
I would like to continue with this story.
Right.
Do you think that that's best?
Yes, I will happily continue with the story. We do have other things to come, of course. We've still got Beer of the Podcast, Hot or Not, and a selection of your tweets. But the story is, I'd say, about halfway done.
Okay.
So let's continue with the story. Alright, so the groups started as expected with Italy beating Russia 2-1, with both goals from Kazaragi beating Russia's reply from Ilya Timbalar. Germany played the Czechs at Old Trafford with Christian Ziege and Thomas Müller doing the damage in a 2-0 win. It was then that the first warning signs from the Czechs appeared. At Anfield, the Czechs saw off the much fancied Italy 2-1. Nedved, in only his 11th start for his country, put them 1-0 up after 5 minutes. Enrico Chiesa scored just over 10 minutes later, and everyone pretty much expected Italy to dominate and win from there. Radek Babel, however, had other ideas, and on 35 minutes he scored, and that was the way it stayed. Looking at the other results, it was the tournament's first real shock, to be honest. Germany then set about brushing Russia aside 3-0, so they were pretty much done and dusted, and it came down to the final set of games. Italy and Germany battled to a hard-fought goalless draw in Manchester. While down the road in Liverpool, the Czechs met the Russians. So it begins with Johnny Dry Sausage, Jan Suchobarek, scoring an unmarked header from a corner, and Pavel Kuka putting the Czech Republic 2-0 up with a really bizarre looping header from a long ball. So within the first 20 minutes, that looks pretty much to be that. The Czechs hit the frame of Stanislav Cheryshov's goal twice. They could have been 4-0 up and out of sight by half-time. However, looking like they were going home in disgrace after having done little of note in their previous two games, the Russians emerged for the second half like a team possessed, and in a flurry of 9 second half minutes, the score was 2-2, with Mostovoy and Omari Tetradze scoring the goals.
Possessed with loads of performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah. At 2-2, the Czechs were absolutely on the back foot, rocking really badly, and although they managed to hit the post again...
Like Kabat, rocking that's really badly.
Rocking really badly.
Sorry.
That's all right. But at this point, the Russians looked like they'd smelled blood. And on 85 minutes, Championship manager superstar Vladimir Bezchastnik drove forward and thumped a powerful strike past Petr Kolba, and it looked like curtains for our heroes. However, with 2 minutes to go, a ball over the top from Kuka released Schmica from midfield, who guides the ball into the far corner for his first ever goal for his country. The Czechs were through on head-to-head results, having beaten Italy. They were both on 4 points,
of course,
with a win and a draw, but their head-to-head results sent them through to the quarterfinals. I will turn my page. For the quarterfinals, the Czechs drew Portugal, who had won a group also containing Croatia, Denmark and Turkey fairly comfortably, but were about to do their fairly typical for the time trick of flattering to deceive. They had most of the possession against the Czechs, but a performance built on a solid defence and a midfield that stymied the Portuguese led them to having an awful lot of the ball but doing very little with it, resulting in a 1-0 win for the Czech Republic. And it was Karol Pavlovský's now iconic lob over the onrushing Vítor Baia that became one of the images of the tournament. And they never really looked like losing the lead until Schalke's Radoslav Latal was sent off 8 minutes from time. The Portuguese had a spell of possession until the end. Jorge Cadete heading wide in Portugal's basically their only real chance of the second half. So the Czechs, without too much of a fuss, were now in the semi-finals. Two of the other quarterfinals had gone to penalties, with England knocking out Spain with a famously redemptive Stuart Pearce kick, featuring before Miguel Angel Nadal's penalty was saved by David Seaman's elbow. And France, France knocking out the Dutch, Clarence Zeidorf uncharacteristically missing his spot kick on that shootout. Germany ominously just brushing aside Croatia 2-1, not really looking that bothered about anything. In the semi-finals, well, Germany beat England on penalties with waistcoats Gareth Southgate missing for the English. The Czechs came up against France in a game that, having watched the highlights, I can only describe as cautious from both sides. Mainly because the Czechs had a raft of players suspended. Sukoparek was out, Latal was out, Kuka was out, Babel was out, and France were missing Didier Deschamps, who was their captain, and Christian Carambo, who had played every game in midfield alongside Djorkaeff and occasionally Zidane at this point.
He bounced back, though, and now the English League Cup's named after him. Sorry.
What?
Keep going.
What is the English League Cup name?
Carabao Cup.
Not anymore. It's
is it not?
Is it the Carabao?
Surely it is.
It is
still
the Carabao Cup. Yeah.
Ay carambo.
Oh, Christian Carambo. He was good though. Christian Carambo. Didn't he go a bit nuts? He went a bit bonkers and started like talking to trees and stuff.
Really?
Or something? Yeah. Yeah. he sort of moved to some island somewhere and yeah, went a bit weird. But he was also married to that Wonder Bra woman.
Yeah,
Herzegova? No?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah, anyway, well done, Christian. Yeah, anyway, Suka Pirate, Latal, Kuka, Babel missing, and Carambo and Deschamps for the French. The Czech started, as mentioned, without Pavel Kuka, and this is a massive loss, as the Kaiserslautern forward had been one of their outstanding players in the tournament so far. This left a 34-year-old Radek Drulák up top on his own. I sort of assumed that Drulák was a bit of a donkey because he hadn't started or even featured in any of the previous games. But he'd been top scorer in the Czech League in the two previous seasons leading up to the finals. He scored 22 goals leading up to Euro 96.
Slavia?
Petra Dernovica.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he scored 22 goals and had got 15 the previous season. So he was absolutely on form. But he was 34 years old and he just didn't really fit a system in which the much more physical Kuka would sort of be the pivot and be surrounded by Schmitzer, Berger, Pavlovský sort of buzzing around him and playing off him. And because the Czechs set up in a very cagey manner, he was just chasing lost causes all game. And for a 5'10", 34-year-old, chasing lost causes was really not his sort of thing. So, the first half, Yuri Djorkaeff scheming around in midfield. France hit the bar, have the better of the game generally. But Berger and Pavlovský attempt to pinch a bit of life back into the Czech attack. Drulák, willing but struggling, as was the now oddly forgotten Patrice Loco, who I remember really enjoying watching in that tournament. And has sort of been kind of forgotten now, Patrice Loco. He started almost every game for France up top. And he was sort of toiling. It was basically 2-4-5-1s playing each other. It was not very pretty. Not a game for the purists. So almost inevitably, penalties arrived. The newfangled golden goal had, as it always would, go against its original purpose and make things even cagier than it had been. Both sides preferring hashtag the lottery of penalties than, you know, risking actually conceding a goal. I will say the standard of penalty shootouts have been incredibly high in the tournament so far, and this was no exception. Neither team missed any of their first five penalty kicks. Patrick Berger, bless him, if you watch it back, hitting his so hard that he looked like, you know, if you put a ball down in front of a small child and they just want to kick it as hard as possible.
Yeah.
So they kind of rev themselves up, run, and straight leg it as hard as possible, straight down. That's exactly what Patrick Berger's looks like. It's a fabulously naff penalty, but, you know, does the job.
I'm into it.
Yeah. And Petter Kolbert agonizingly seeing Laurent Blanc's effort sort of squirm under his body and go over the line. So, five penalties scored each, we got to sudden death. Immediately, up steps Nantes midfielder Reynald Pedros, or Pedro, possibly with a silent S, I don't know. In the prime of his career, at the age of 26, he'd played about 20-some times for his country before this, and his penalty was Southgate-esque.
Oh, yeah.
Weak, straight down the middle, no problem for Kolbert whatsoever. France are out. Pedros was made a pariah by the French press and never played a competitive game for his country again.
Seems to be quite a few players in that tournament for France that, you know, had no part whatsoever in the World Cup winning team. There's a few there that you mentioned, people like Blanc, Jorkaeff and stuff who were, but there was others.
Yeah, Loco and people like that. Yeah.
I think Carambo was...
I think Loco happened to be in the right place at the right time. I think he was at Metz at that point. He were doing incredibly well.
With their amazing dragon mascot.
Yes. Yeah. And they were having a spurt of doing very, very well. I think they won a cup and they played European competition, and he was the boy for Metz at that point.
Racing just, Metz, isn't it? Or something?
Yeah, Racing.
Racing. Yeah.
And he sort of just vanished without trace, I think, which is kind of a shame. Anyway, on to the final, where the Czechs would meet Germany. And the Czechs did what they'd done for most of the latter stages. They were organised, they were broke. They were broke? No, they were organised and broke with speed, using Kuka as their central
pivot. No one told you football's going to be this way.
Yeah, they had a central pivot with a dynamic duo of Berger and Poborski causing the most mischief, Nedved sitting behind them pulling the strings. The first half of the final, as with many of the games, was a bit of a non-event. If you look back, it was not that exciting of a tournament for goals. And the most damning thing I can say about the final is, if you look at the stats, the number of shots on goal the Czechs and the Germans both had were the number of times they scored. And the number of shots they had off target was none each. Which pretty much sums up the tournament, to be honest.
It's time, that sort of stuff, though,
as well. It is, yeah, because USA 94 was not a massively high-scoring tournament either.
Really not a great tournament.
It was when France 98 turned up. For some reason, everyone went a bit mad.
Goals started, coming quite a lot. 2002 as well, was after that, was quite a fest, I believe. Is that not?
I think it's that weird crossover between where players found they should probably start looking after themselves more than they had done. It was around Arsene Wenger's pasta revolution, where players realised it probably wasn't great to go out and have 10 pints after training every day, you know, and they started getting a bit more athletic and things like that. It was at that sort of cusp anyway, wasn't it?
It was all these sorts of tournaments at the time I always just think of as the sort of the penalties tournament, sort of like 1994 and 96.
Yeah.
Are all ones that I would remember more for penalties or penalty misses than I would for, you know, some like real standouts.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. Yeah. So like I said, the first half of the final, bit of a non-event. Second half, things liven up. Matthias Zammer, who will later be voted player of the tournament, brings down Kaja Poborski in the area on 58 minutes, and Berger, after having scored that wonderful, wonderful penalty in the semi-finals, hammers home the resulting penalty to make it 1-0. Enter, stage left, Oliver Bierhoff. Now, despite impressing with Udinese, his career had never really got going in Germany. He had done so little in his one season at Hamburg, he'd been released. He played 8 games at Mönchengladbach, didn't impress there either, and looked like he was set to be one of those nearly men who sort of drift around, not quite good enough for the big leagues. However, he found his way to Austria Salzburg and absolutely ripped up the Austrian league in his one season there. He scored 23 goals in 32 games, which got him a move to Ascoli in Serie B in Italy. He was their top scorer there for three straight seasons, and but unfortunately the team was relegated to Serie C1, and he got his move to Udinese in Serie A. And it was from there that he was added to the Euro 96 squad, because he was banging them in for Udinese as well. He finally found his home. And Germany coach Bertie Vogts, call me Bertie McVogts. Initially, he...
Christian!
Sorry. Initially, he didn't actually want to take Bierhoff to England with the squad. It was his wife who told him, take Bierhoff, he will repay you. So the story goes.
That's very much like what I often say to you in the pub as well. Take beer, I'll repay you.
Yes. Yeah. When we have beer often. Sorry.
The content you need.
You know, yes. Anyway, repay him. He did. Introduced for Mehmet Scholl in the 69th minute. He scored the equaliser 4 minutes later to take the game into extra time. Extra time comes around, and on the edge of the box in the 95th minute, Bierhoff receives the ball with his back to goal, uses all of his 6'3" and all of his strength. He holds off a Czech defender, swivels, and hits a left-foot effort that looked more speculative than anything. However, the ball strikes Michal Horniak, and Kolba, who would have been right behind it, suddenly had to throw his hands out to the left. And Bierhoff's shot was just hard enough to go through his gloves. And as Kolba turns to see what's happened, he's just in time to see it trickle across the line. And for the Czechs, that was that. With the stuffing utterly knocked out of them, it was left to Germany to see out the second 15-minute extra time period and lift the trophy. So there. What do we think? There we go.
Good story.
Yeah.
as if you just sort of like made up like it happened. Like Euro 96 happened.
It did happen, yeah. Before we go to a break and we go into some of the more regular-ish stuff, I just want to have a quick what became of this Czech side. Well, their immensely exciting, talented midfield all got their big moves that they deserved. Poborský to Manchester United, Pavel Nedved to Lazio. Patrick Berger went slightly sideways. He was already at Borussia Dortmund, but he moved to Liverpool from there. Schmitzer went to France with Lens before moving onward to Liverpool to join Berger.
Famously.
Goalkeeper Kolba got his big move to Deportivo La Coruña, but only played four games for them, unfortunately.
Played twice, though. Came back later and then played four games or something.
Yeah, he played four more. Mm-hmm. He failed to make a single appearance in a single season with Kaiserslautern. He found his way back and finished up at... Well, he didn't finish up, but he came back to this country with Viktoria Žižkov.
Yeah.
Pavel Kuka remained at Kaiserslautern for one more season, then had spells at Nuremberg and Stuttgart, bringing his Bundesliga adventure to an end. Jirka Niemetz and Radoslav Latal were mainstays of a Schalke side that won the UEFA Cup in 1996 and the DFB Pokal in 2001, and players I saw live playing for Schalke at the Parkstadion in a fabulous Schalke side in, I believe, 99 or 2000. Mm-hmm. A fantastic Schalke side featuring Eber Zandt, Mark Wilmots, Olaf Ton, Oliver Reck. Yeah. Lovely side. Otherwise, I think that Czech side should just be remembered as a bunch of guys who appeared as if from nowhere in a small corner of Lancashire with their own beer tent and spent a long, hot summer nearly, very nearly, conquering European football.
I'm speaking now.
Yeah, sorry, that was a lot of me talking because I had it all scripted out, so I wanted it to be like a proper narrative without any...
Yeah. It's usually a lot of me talking, though, when, you know, we go into to what's up with, you know, bloody Žižkov's formation or whatever. I asked on Twitter about people's Euro 96 moments, and a grand total of two people got back to me.
Oh, good.
On this.
That's nice.
So we have, and I'm sorry because I'm not Spanish, Joaquin Diaz?
Joaquin Diaz.
Who is a follower of us, is a Deportivo fan.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
So he's Deportivo La Coruña.
Copping.
And he writes, as a Deportivo fan, oh boy, what a dark year now, with Koba as our substitute goalkeeper for the next season and all the kids playing as Pavel Nedved.
Nice.
So I thought that was quite cute. Good.
I can't believe we have a follower who's a Deportivo fan. That's incredible.
We've got followers who are Zbrojovka fans. So here's Roman, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Roman, who was was going to go to the final right. by car, bracket, Škoda favorite.
Good.
And mother of my friend cooked for us a big pot of goulash, 50 servings. In the end, we didn't go because we didn't have tickets.
Okay.
And the same year, they won the hockey in Vienna. So,
nice.
Yeah, there was still some Czech celebrations there. So, shout out to Roman.
Yes, and Joaquin. Yes. Mm-hmm. We got a thing on Facebook from Greg.
Oh, yes.
Aitken there. He says somewhere he still has a postcard of Jan Suchopárek bought from a kiosk on Cheska in 1996. That's good. So that's nice, isn't it?
I was thinking about talking a bit about Scotland at Euro 96, but I think it's a bit too football heavy. And also, it's another glorious failure by Scotland. What must have been one of the easiest qualifying groups as well. So we somehow didn't manage to balls it up as we usually do, because we were third seeds as usual in the qualifications. And who were the two higher seeds than us? Russia and Greece. Russia, Greece, Finland, Faroe Islands and San Marino.
Wow.
And we lost once to the Greeks.
Uh-huh.
And sort of we got through, I think, as fourth highest second place
nice.
Finishers or whatever. And then it was not nice because yet again we went out of a tournament on fucking, you know, goal difference or whatever. It wasn't even goal difference, it was goal scored because we finished with the Dutch on the same grid.
That's right, because we knackered you because we beat the Dutch, but we beat them 4-1. Mm-hmm. And it was that goal that basically did for you.
Yeah, so it was out in goal scored because we only scored one goal, I think, in the
that
competition.
That would probably have been against Switzerland.
Ali McCoist against Switzerland.
Yeah.
Good goal, really good goal, actually. But that was really it for us. Mm. Good hard-earned point against the Dutch. And then, well, we know what happened because it's been done to death.
Yeah.
About the game at Wembley.
Yeah.
Though that Gaza goal is not the most annoying thing in that game at all. It's the Shearer goal. Is it Shearer that scores from the header?
Almost certainly. He was top scorer in the tournament. I'm shocked. Almost certainly it was Shearer.
Just I hate that goal. I hate everything about that goal. Like Neville has way too much space to cross it, and then it just like sails over both Colin Hendry and Colin Cameron's heads, and it's just like come on. It's just such a Scotland thing.
And it's also the time when. If you didn't want literally anyone else in that penalty area, it was Alan Shearer.
Yeah.
Because he was absolute, like, sort of from 96 to about 99 was his absolute imperial period, where he was just unstoppable.
Well, top scorer for that tournament, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And, I mean, to be honest, like, Scott, after the penalty save, we were done for, Gaza or not, I think.
Yeah.
Momentum had just completely swung. Is it a bad penalty or is it a really good save? Because I'm in the good save column, I think, on this one.
I think it's a good save as well. It's a decent hit from McAllister there, who I think was currently in Coventry's employ, I think.
Yes, or, he was Coventry's present player.
Yeah, presently in Coventry's employ.
And that's his moment for Scotland, unfortunately.
Yeah,
he's missing that.
So, yeah.
Though, I mean,
which is sad because what a magnificent player he was.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, yeah. See, like, not a lot of people talk about David Seaman in that game now, but like Seaman also made like a really good save from a Gordon Dewry header. One of those ones where the save looks pretty good, but it's actually. If you know a bit about goalkeeping, it's a fantastic save because Seaman is basically hurtling his head towards a post. Very good, but terrible, terrible memories. Thank God I don't remember it personally, you know?
Yeah. Talking of making things easier to not remember personally, beer of the podcast?
Beer of the podcast sounds good.
Yeah. Beer of the Podcast.
It's Beer of the Podcast.
Okay, sure. I think we've left that long enough to put the intro in there.
It's Beer of the Podcast, I say after you, forgetting again that the music comes in.
Yeah, there's music there. But it's in now. We're playing, so that's good.
This is looking like my sort of beer, David, that you've plonked in front of me.
It's very dark red. It's almost purple in its dark reddery.
Will I be in flavour country?
Well, we'll see. It is Axiom Brewery's Sour Station Berliner Weisse beer.
It's that sour, boys!
And it's raspberry, so I've been told. It comes in these little tiny cans, in these 330ml cans. 4.5%. Expensive.
Did you get it at the Axiom Bar?
I did.
Horribly expensive. That's where I got the...
That Finnish awfulness. Estonian awfulness.
Yeah.
This was for two 330ml cans. This was 156 crowns, I think, for two of these little cans. So it's quite expensive. Okay. I say quite, I mean very.
It's basically like buying Iron Brew here. Like I treat myself to a 50 crown can here.
Yeah. But it's very, very dark in colour. Like reddy, almost purple.
It looks like a pint of... I was going to say diesel, if you know that, like snake bite with blackcurrant.
That's right, yeah. You call it diesel.
We call it diesel.
We just call it snakey bee. Because
snake bite is just I think lager.
It's lager inside.
I think if you add blackcurrant, it's a diesel.
Snakey bee. Snake bite and blackcurrant, because snake bite is just lager and cider, but snake bite and black adds the blackcurrant. We just weren't that creative.
Snakey bee,
unfortunately.
God.
If you were at Aston University at the turn of the millennium, then Snakey bee it was. I'm afraid.
I mean, it's the same sort of people that call spaghetti bolognese spag ball, man.
I'd do that too. Anyway.
used to not be in English, I suppose.
Yeah. chin, here we go. Smells kind of odd, but... palatable.
Beautiful. I like sour beers.
Ooh yeah. Ooh mummy. Dear me.
This is much more of an organic tasting thing as well.
It is.
It's not too much of that artificial raspberry. There's a bit of the back thing, but you're sort of getting an almost like, this will sound weird, but in a good way, like almost this sort of composty thing in the back. It's got that sort of...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah, it tastes slightly soily.
Yeah, I'm all over it. That's beautiful.
Do we think it will go well with Thai chili rice crackers?
Mm.
Get
the sound effect on the mic, David.
All right. This is it, because this is going to be a party in my mouth, and everyone's invited here. All right. So
more about your sound as well.
So what? All right. Crunching down the microphone. I can't leave dead air while you're crunching.
Crunch.
So, no, I can't crunch while you're crunching. So how that works.
Man, this is why we have, over 10 listeners.
12.
That's good.
Right, I'm going to crunch now.
Oh, you got a good crunch on there.
Oh, good walk.
This is turning into the audio version of Mukbang, isn't it? Like, it's such a, like, ooh, Asian lady eats noodles.
Yeah. Anyway, listeners, if you've enjoyed us crunching down on our rice crackers and listening to us drink beer, by the way, Jorge Cadlets, I'm not sure if that is your real name, but yeah, Mr. Chap who lives in The Hague, mm-hmm. in the Netherlands, and listens to us, who gets a craving for Czech beer every time he hears us do Beer of the Podcast, you should now be craving Berliner Weisse fruit sour beer and crunchy, crunchy rice crackers. And we hope you are. Gonna get some hard or nots, baby, this evening. Gonna get some hard or nots, baby, tonight. Get some hard or nots, baby, this evening. Sammy, give me hot or not. Sammy, give me hot or nuts tonight.
Hot nuts. Dun, 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 dun.
Sammy, give some hot or nuts.
Dun, dun,
dun, dun. What do you got?
Suppose you want a hot or not.
I'd love one.
All right, here's my hot this week. It's woke football pundits, David. So far we've seen Gary Neville.
Yes.
So Gary Neville talking about the Manchester Derby and the unfortunate racism that happened there.
Yeah.
And blaming a lot of this on the rhetoric and hostile environment of Boris Johnson.
Yes.
But my favourite, and I never thought I would say this in the world,
Souness.
Was, did you see Souness?
I did see Graham Souness. Good on the boy.
Good on Graham, because I was brought up to believe that Graham Souness is a cunt. And this decided.
You don't have to be brought up that way to believe that either, to be honest.
Sui is showing his progressive side here, where he is standing up for the idea of LGBT footballers and how his opinions and worldview is Road to Damascus was via Brighton Pride.
Yes.
Which he called a great day out.
It was one of the best sort of 2 minutes of TV I've seen recently. Like he genuinely, like he was urging people who didn't understand, I think, people who were LGBT or didn't have any interaction with them, to just come down and experience Pride and get involved and get to know the people. And he said it was brilliant and an eye-opening experience and something that he'd never considered and would thoroughly encourage people to do.
You should go to a Pride, by the way. If you haven't gone to a Pride before, you should go, because it's always a good day out. The Glasgow one is usually very good. I've never been to the Pride in Prague yet, but it should also be quite good. But
yeah, so absolutely spot on, Suey, though.
In a week, especially, where British media and journalism has been nothing short of an absolute fucking cesspool.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually a little bit of like bright lights there, and I cannot wait until this election is over.
Both Suey and Neville doing the Lord's work. The excellent stuff from both of them.
Yeah,
good stuff. I've got a hot.
Good.
Tuomo Bakayoko.
Uh-huh.
Do you know this?
Well, you're going to have to say it for the...
Well, this is a very good one. He is on loan from Chelsea at Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
He had a year at Chelsea where he was brought in to be the yin to N'Golo Kante's yang a couple of years ago. It hasn't really worked out for him. So he is back on loan at Monaco, where they had previously taken him from, and is getting back to his best. He had previously worn shirt number 14 at Monaco and AC Milan and at Chelsea. And Monaco playing, I think, Nîmes possibly this weekend. And they wanted to sub off Keita Balde, who is the actual number 14. However, Bakayoko sees the number comes up, applauds the fans, jogs towards the bench, only to be met with a load of bemused smiles and what the hell are you doing here? His shirt number is now number 6.
Fantastic.
So, yes, and laughs all around and... Everybody enjoyed a big bowl of jelly and ice cream afterwards. So that was it's a very cute 30 seconds of footage, if you can find it. It's just everyone going, what the hell are you doing over here? You're not number 14.
Give that man a glass of syrup.
Yeah, it was great. That's my hot. I just really enjoyed
wholesome
it.
Wholesome hot. I like that. This is a football podcast, so it took every bone in my body for my not to not be Laura Koonsberg.
Google it.
And once you've done that, you can also Google Peston. Don't. All right, so my not is the World Anti-Doping Agency.
Yes.
David. Because
wada wada, hey, hey. Wada wada, hey, hey.
I know I'm going to come over as a bitter Scot here. It's not just because if Russia were, going to get kicked out or whatever... Morally, I feel Scotland, as being the third in that group, should go to the Euros. The two most glorious words in the English language, default. I just can't get over this. Like how UEFA and the European Championships are not seen as a major event, and thus Russia are allowed to compete. Like the World Cup,
they're out.
They're out. Yeah. Olympics, out. UEFA 2020, not out. And do you know what's the worst thing about this? Again, I know I'm coming over bitter, but the president of WADA, Craig Reedy, is from fucking Stirling. Sort of Patriots this. you had one job, Craig. It was to get Scotland in by hook or by fucking crook. And you even didn't do that. And this basically is why Tories are going to start running Scotland, because we're all fucking useless. Do you want that, Craig? Do you want that? You probably do, but no. Raging. Absolutely raging at that.
This public service announcement was brought to you by Sam Beaton Political. This bought and paid for by the Sam Beaton for Government governmental initiative.
This is it, man. Talk about Russians interfering in the election, man. Like, honest to God.
God. Oh, wow.
As someone far more famous than me once said or once wrote, it's shite being Scottish.
Who wrote that? I'd say a lot of Scots.
Irvin Welsh, right?
Ah, right.
Trainspotting.
Okay. Right, so yeah, that's of course.
Yeah. Please vote out the Tories. Please fucking vote out the Tories, man.
If you're listening to this and have any sway in the UK, Tories out. It doesn't matter who. Just, like, not liking the people who could get in doesn't mean you can't utterly dislike the people who are in now.
Hear, hear.
Just, there might not be a... You might not think there's a good choice, but there is a worse choice. And that's what we have to get rid of.
Can I have a very 10-second bonus nod?
Go on.
Glasgow City Council's Electoral Commission for yet again fucking up my postal vote, which has not arrived. So I'm not going to be able to vote in this election. And I was also unable to vote in the fucking Scottish independence referendum because they can't send a fucking ballot over to the Czech Republic. David, did you get your postal vote?
I did, yes.
Case in point. Sorry.
Yes, Reading Borough Council, very good. And Matt Rodder has already received, via Reading Borough Council, my vote. So there we go. Hashtag Tories out.
So next time, like, honestly, if you live quite far away from Britain reasonably, like, proxy might be the way to go, depending on your local authority, next time.
Anyway, we'll move from the politics podcast back.
Well, like, decompress over here.
For one very quick knot, which is my final knot before we have our play-out song, my knot is Ipswich Town.
Sick of playing them already?
Fucking sick of them. Absolutely sick of them. We had them December the 1st at home, 1-1, in the FA Cup. Yeah. We had them a week later, 1-1 at home in the league.
Yeah.
We've got them tonight at Portman Road for the FA Cup replay.
I think the replay, of course,
That'll be 1-1, probably.
Well, I mean, well done for, like, 94th minute, I think it was, equaliser?
Yeah. Chris, somebody? No, it was Max Biamu.
Oh, okay.
Again. But yeah, just absolutely sick of them. Sick of the sight of them. We get them again March 7th away for the return league fixture.
Like, that is honestly, like, a not generally, though, is, you know, when you have, like, the cup and you get drawn against a team in your league, especially in Scotland, because Cali Thistle have played Alloa, I think, 4 times already. They have to play them, like, another 3 times before the end of the season.
Uh-huh.
But, like, nonsense. They got drawn in, like, they got drawn in the Challenge Cup and in the Scottish Cup.
Yeah. Right, anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening. We will have a number of specials coming your way over the course of the festive wintry period. So, stick around, listen in, tell your friends, like, subscribe, etc. and so forth. We're on all the audio channels, Audio Boom and SoundCloud and Pod Things and etc. And we're on at Facebook, at Sparrowcast on Facebook and Twitter. So that'll be it. We're going to play you out with a bit of this magnificent thing suggested by a friend of the show, Bara Verzakova. So thanks for that. And
is this going to be our last pod before Christmas?
Well, will depend on what we can be bothered with. The next one will be with you when it's with you, I think.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, if we don't see you, Merry Christmas.
And if we do,
Merry Christmas twice.
Yes.
Bye. Bye.
Mezi námi je mnoho chvil a pokusů, abych se ti zavděčil, jenomže od tebe se člověk moc nerozví, stále básníš o nějakém svém záhadném čendrovi. Je toho moc, co to já nesnesu, zašel jsem na čendovou adresu a čenda před domem zpíval rock'n'roll pro dívky, které se tam denně skází cestou z různých škol. Podívej, mám styl čendy, nevím, kde ho čenda vzal. já ho sebral od něho a on si ho moc nehlídal. Mám styl čendy, je to pikantní, a chceš-li něco nového, tak já jsem navíc galantní. Mám styl čendy, mám styl čendy. Čendovi už dochází rock'n'roll, já jsem před ním nejméně o 20 kol. Ta hudba stává se mi zábavnou, jestli mě kápeš, nejsem čenda, já tě chci chápavou. Podívej, mám styl čendy, nevím, kde ho čenda vzal. Já ho sebral od něho, a on si ho moc nehlídal. Mám styl čendy, je to pikantní. Chceš-li něco nového, tak já jsem navíc galantní. Mám styl čendy. 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 Mám styl čendy.